Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Range War in Whiskey Hill by Charles G. West. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Christopher Sheeran, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinolini, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Stephen Carpenter, Eva Wilhelm, Gregory Gordon, Thomas Penny, Nanette Savard, Tim Carlin, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Bradley Smith, Tim Getman, Tim Pabone, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Yasmin Toison, Dan Sontag, Kimberly Gilbert, James Keegan, and Alyssa Wilman. Like two old bulls, the two big men stood eyeing each other, determined and defiant. Frank Drummond had made an offer to buy out Sam McCrae's Bar M Ranch, a section of range that he needed and intended to have.
Well, how many different ways do you have to hear the word no before you get it through that thick skull that you ain't getting the Bar M? You and that gang of outlaws that work for you have scared most of the smaller ranchers out of the territory. You even got to Sessions last year, but by God, you ain't getting the Bar M or the Broken M. Me and my brother were here before you ever saw this valley, and we, by God, plan to be here after you're gone. You've had your say now, so you can climb back in that buckboard and get the hell off my land.
You've gotten my final offer, McCrae. Now we'll see who stays in this valley and who doesn't.
Drummond turned away and climbed back in his buckboard. Sam stood on the top step of his porch, a deep scowl etched across his weathered face, watching until the buckboard disappeared behind the cottonwoods at the bend of the creek.
I hope to hell he finally believes he ain't running me off my land.
Drummond already owned all the land from the north bank of Lodgepole Creek to the stream that formed the boundary at the beginning of McCrae Range. That wasn't enough for Drummond, though. He wanted to control all the land between Lodgepole Creek and Whiskey Hill, more than 15 miles of open range. Drummond had offered a fraction of the value of the land between his spread and the free-flowing water of Crooked Creek. Even if the offered price had been reasonable, Sam had no intention of selling. He and his brother Bert, who owned a spread adjacent to his, had first come to settle here when the town of Cheyenne was known as Crow Creek Crossing. There was plenty of land north of Crow Creek Crossing for everyone then. Sam and Bert weren't the only settlers who claimed portions of the vast prairie convenient to the proposed Union Pacific Railroad line. There were a good many more, enough to establish a small town called Whiskey Hill, a half day's ride from Crow Creek Crossing. Drummond moved in a couple of years later with a crew of men more at home on wanted posters than tending cattle. His intentions were apparent. He was building a cattle empire, and he went about acquiring all the land one way or another. The smaller ranchers fell one by one. Some sold out to Drummond at desperation prices, and some had unfortunate accidents. And before long, only the McCrae brothers and Walter Sessions had remained to stand between Drummond and Crooked Creek. Now, Sessions had also knuckled under after too many cattle had gone missing or been found shot. With the completion of the railroad in November 1867, Crow Creek Crossing was renamed Cheyenne, and had already earned a reputation as one of the wildest towns in Wyoming Territory. The little town of Whiskey Hill naturally inherited some of Cheyenne's undesirables. When the Union Pacific moved on to Laramie City, the construction workers and many of the riffraff that contributed to Cheyenne's sinful ways followed right along.
I wish to hell Frank Drummond and his crowd had moved on with them.
In the barn, Sam saddled his sorrel mare.
Vance should be back from the South Ridge before supper time. I'd best ride up as far as the North Fork to make sure we ain't losing any more strays.
It bothered him that he had to tell Vance to check the South Ridge. His oldest son should have learned by now to think of it himself. Vance showed absolutely no evidence of ever being able to take over the management of the ranch.
He needs a little more of his brother's grit in him.
The thought brought a familiar moment of regret to the gray-haired patriarch of the Bar M spread. Vance's younger brother, Colt, was as different from Vance as night from day, and Sam blamed himself for the distance between father and son. In looking back to find a reason, he regretfully admitted that it was because Colt was clearly his mother's favorite. When Martha was taken by pneumonia, it seemed to change the 13-year-old boy. He missed his mother, and Sam knew he should have been more patient. Colt seemed to be mad at the world for the senseless death of his mother and resistant to any form of authority. Sam often thought about Colt. He was convinced that if Colt had been allowed to sow his wild oats, he would eventually have settled down to run the ranch. But Sam's young firebrand son had been shipped off to prison at the age of 18 for a crime Sam faithfully believed the boy did not commit. Colt said he didn't have anything to do with it, and reckless and wild as he had been, Colt had never been a liar.
Damn, I missed that boy.
Sam guided the mare toward a path that led up to the ridge.
I'd better go over and tell Bert that Drummond was here again. We'll probably start missing some stock again.
Sam McCray stiffened, then slid to the ground. A .44 slug embedded between his shoulder blades.
McCray, you've got a letter.
Colt McCray looked up. The last letter he had received was 2 years before when his father had taken the time to write.
Who's it from?
Bob Witcher handed the letter through the bars.
Bert McCray? It says on the envelope. Is that your daddy?
No, that's my Uncle Bert.
Bob Witcher watched with interest. Of all the guards in the prison, Bob was the only one who had taken a personal interest in the solemn young man from Wyoming Territory. He had watched the hostile, wild-eyed kid develop from a skinny, tough-talking hothead into a soft-spoken man of few words. Bob had seen a strain of decency in the young prisoner. And after knowing him for a few years, he became convinced that Colt really was innocent of the crimes with which he had been charged. He liked to think that he had been influential in Colt's maturing into a man. Aware of the bitterness festering in Colt's soul, Witcher had spent quite a few hours talking to Colt about the evil erosion of a man's mind when consumed with thoughts of vengeance. Over the years, as Colt grew in maturity, Witcher witnessed the silent strength of that maturity. There was little doubt, however, that the penitentiary's prisoner work program had to be given credit for Colt's physical development, turning that skinny boy into a prison-hardened man. Colt read his uncle's letter, then, without comment or even a change of expression, he placed the letter on his cot.
Bad news?
They killed my pa. Shot him in the back.
Oh, damn, son. That is bad news. Do they know who shot him?
Yeah, they know. Uncle Bert says nobody saw it happen, but there ain't any doubt who was behind it. Maybe they don't know who pulled the trigger, but they damn sure know who ordered it done.
That's sorrowful news. But don't you go getting all riled up and having the warden order you into solitary for a few days. You don't want to add no time on your sentence when you're this close to getting out.
Witcher had seen it happen before when a prisoner received bad news from home that prompted an attempt to escape. It was the warden's policy to impose a cool-down period until he was convinced that the inmate was no longer inclined to attempt some fool damn scheme to run. It would be a shame in Colt's case since the young man had only 6 months to go.
It's against the rules, but I won't report this to the warden if you'll promise me you ain't gonna do something stupid.
I ain't gonna cause no trouble, Bob. I am to do my time and leave this place in 6 months. Uncle Bert wants me to come back to Whiskey Hill when my time's up. Says he and Vance need my help. There's a ticket in here from Omaha to Cheyenne, but I'd have to make it to Omaha on my own. Maybe I'll think on it.
Bob nodded. He knew that Colt had not intended to return to Whiskey Hill when he was released, having had his fill of the community that had stripped him of almost 10 years of his life. Although he thought he had a limited window into the man's mind, Witcher could not know the depth of sadness the report of Colt's father's murder caused. Colt had never been especially close to his father. He was closer to his Uncle Bert. Maybe it was because Bert McCrae's nature was closer to that of the wild young boy who felt more at home in the foothills and mountains than on a cattle ranch. A sad smile formed on Colt's face as he pictured his uncle, husky and rugged, bigger than life, like Colt. Bert had been the black sheep of the family, a stark contrast to Colt's father, who was a man of few words and steady as a rock. Colt wondered how the years had changed his uncle. Then he reminded himself that nothing outside of an act of God could change Bert McCrae. He with his prized possession, a derby hat bought in Omaha, cocked jauntily to one side as he rode herd on his ranch hands. The coolness between Colt and his father was cause now for regret on the son's part, for he felt it was his fault, and now the opportunity to atone for it was lost. It would have been better if he'd been more like his brother. Then the gulf between him and his father might not have been so wide. Like his father and his uncle, Colt and Vance were miles apart as young boys, and that too was a shame. Maybe now it could be fixed. As he had said, he would think on returning and bide his time. In August 1868, Colt McCrae had been brought in chains to the godforsaken prison in Leavenworth County, along with two of his accused accomplices, Billy Watts and Roy Barnes. The third, Joe Tucker, who had actually shot the bank guard, had been hanged in Whiskey Hill. A skinny 18-year-old boy at the time, Colt was guilty of nothing more than having the wrong circle of friends. Joe, Billy, and Roy were all older than Colt, but they tolerated him and another boy his age, Ronnie Skinner. Fascinated by the three hoodlums' big talk, Colt and Ronnie would always while away countless hours hanging around the Plainsman Saloon, listening to their talk of cattle rustling and bank robberies that never came to pass. There were many times during the past 9 years when Colt had wished he had taken his father's advice and sought his formal education elsewhere. Although wild and reckless, Colt was not dishonest, and for that reason he carried a nagging sense of guilt for not warning the sheriff about a planned robbery of the Bank of Whiskey Hill. In his defense, he had not been certain that it was not just more Joe Tucker's big talk. Ronnie was not so skeptical, and he asked to go along on the robbery. It was Ronnie that Eunice Fletcher got a glimpse of on that fateful day as he held the horses behind the bank. But it was Colt who she pointed out in the courtroom. Colt never expected Ronnie to step forward and confess, but he felt that when he got his day in court, Mrs. Fletcher's identification might not stand up to a good lawyer's questioning. Actually, she had seen Ronnie holding the horses from the back door of her husband's dry goods store, over 100 yards from the bank. Unfortunately for Colt, it was a time of wild and lawless behavior with the influx of the railroad construction crews and the riffraff that followed them. The gamblers, the outlaws, the saloons. It was too much to handle for the sheriff and his deputy. As a result, a vigilance committee was formed that was swift on punishment and not prone to lengthy trials. The bank guard named Joe Tucker as his killer before he died, and the Gunny Sack Gang, as the Vigilance Committee was called, swept down on the three robbers while they were still counting the money at Tucker's shack that evening. The fourth member of the gang, who held the horses out back, was not at the shack when the posse struck, but it didn't matter. They had an eyewitness. Colt McRae was arrested the next morning. There'd been no trial to speak of and no lawyer for the defense. The four prisoners were marched before Judge Blake, who listened to the sheriff's account of the crime, then promptly passed sentence. Joe Tucker was hanged on the spot. The crowd who had gathered to witness the trial wanted the other three to hang as well, but Billy and Roy were sentenced to 20 years, while Colt got 10. Now, over 9 years later, Colt peered out the window of a train as it slowed down, passing the stockyards on the east side of town. He had no desire to return to Cheyenne, but his curiosity prompted him to peer with interest at the houses and stores that were not even there 9 years ago. Given a choice, he might have remained on the train and continued on west to the foothills of the Laramie Mountains, where he had often gone as a boy to escape the monotony of ranch work. With no horse and no money other than the few dollars in his pocket, however, he felt forced to respond to his uncle's request for help. His uncle could provide the horse and the rifle he would need to find his father's killer. During the long, lonely nights in prison, he had held on to the image of the hills and mountains only a good day's ride from Whiskey Hill. It was a land of gently rolling hills with low grassy meadows and steep granite formations that led to the mountains farther west. Colt got to his feet, carrying his earthly possessions in a tiny bundle tied with a string. It was a long walk from Cheyenne to Whiskey Hill, a half day's ride on a horse. Walking would take considerably longer, but he had no other means of transportation. Mayor Roy Whitworth slid his coffee cup over to the edge of the table for Mary Simmons to refill. He paused to give the young half-Cheyenne waitress an approving smile before resuming his conversation with Raymond Fletcher, expounding on his plans for his re-election campaign. He was interrupted by the sudden appearance of Barney Samuels, who made straight for the little table in the back room where the town's leading citizens routinely met for lunch.
You ain't gonna believe who I just saw get off Freighter's wagon. At least who I think I saw.
Who?
Colt McRae. He looks a hell of a lot different, but I swear it's him.
Barney's statement caused both men at the table to suddenly sit upright.
Hell, Barney, you must have started drinking a little early today. Colt McRae's still in prison. Won't get out for some years yet.
I ain't had a drop today. He's been gone longer than you think, I reckon. I swear, if it ain't him, it sure as hell's his double. Only this one's a hell of a lot bigger.
What in hell would he want to come back here for?
The mayor was about to dismiss Barney's claim as mistaken identity when the sheriff walked back, accompanied by the owner of the diner, Oscar Anderson.
Say, J.D., Barney here thinks he saw Colt McRae get off a wagon that just pulled into town. You hear anything about him coming back to Whiskey Hill?
Nope, but I expect he might have seen McRae. I got a paper on him a week ago.
A week ago? And you didn't say nothing about it?
What the hell was I supposed to say? All it said was that he was released from prison. Didn't say he was coming back here. Tell you the truth, I didn't think he'd ever show his face here or in Cheyenne again. Ex-convicts generally go somewhere they ain't known.
Well, I expect it would be best if you told him to keep right on moving. We don't need his kind in Whiskey Hill. We cleaned up this town 8 years ago, and we sure as hell don't need any jailbirds in our community.
Well, Roy, I can't lawfully tell him he can't stay.
But you can let him know he ain't welcome.
Well, of course I have a talk with him, Oscar. I expect he ain't planning to stay for long anyway. Hell, it might not even been McRae that Barney saw anyway. It's been 9 years, and he wasn't much more than a boy at the time.
It was him, and he sure as hell ain't no boy now.
The topic of the back table's discussion was at that moment standing before the door of the Whiskey Hill kitchen, thinking of a time over 10 years before, when Oscar Anderson had thrown him out of the diner with instructions never to come back. The thought of it brought a thin smile to Colt's face. He had probably earned Oscar's wrath, although he had tried to do it at the same time he was buying some breakfast. He was promptly hustled out the door by the burly Anderson simply because Oscar didn't want his kind in his establishment. He took a moment to count the money in his pocket to be sure he had enough left to buy a meal. Then he opened the door and entered. The place hadn't changed much since the last time he had seen it, with the exception of a row of wooden booths along the far wall where a long table had been previously. He glanced around the open diner for a few seconds before walking over and seating himself in one of the new booths. The waitress, a young girl, walked over to take his order.
What can I get you? You want the lunch special?
Is it too late to order some breakfast? I just got in town, and what I'd really like is some scrambled eggs and bacon.
He thought that it would be fitting to be served the breakfast he had tried to buy when Oscar threw him out.
I didn't think I'd seen you in here before. Sure, you can get some eggs. Pearl will fix you breakfast any time of day. You new in town or just passing through?
Colt returned her smile as he took a moment to study her face. Dark hair and eyes, pretty in a wild way. If he had to guess, he would say that there was Indian blood somewhere along her family line.
I may stay for a spell. I'm not sure yet. I used to live near here, but I've been away for a while.
Well, welcome back. I'll get you some coffee.
She turned and went to the kitchen. In the kitchen, Pearl Murray was busy filling up plates of meatloaf and potatoes for the table in the back room.
I need an order of scrambled eggs and bacon.
The hell you do? Who the hell for?
Customer in the front booth.
Why can't he eat meatloaf like everybody else?
He just got in town, and I guess he missed breakfast. I told him sweet old Pearl would be more than thrilled to fix him whatever he wants. Besides, he's not bad looking.
I should have known. It ain't enough I got the town big shots in the back room. Now I gotta stop and fix some drifter breakfast.
Colt glanced up when Mary approached with a steaming mug of coffee. Placing it down before him, she slid into the booth across from him.
So you've been away for a while. What brings you back to Whiskey Hill?
Came to see my uncle.
Your uncle? Who would that be?
Bert McRae.
Oh, Bert, I know him. He comes in once in a while when he's in town. Vance, too. You know Vance?
He's my brother.
Oh.
Does Oscar Anderson still own this place?
Yes. Do you want to talk to him?
No. I just wondered. That's all.
She remained there for an awkward moment while he sipped his coffee.
Well, I'll go see about your breakfast.
I was about to holler for you. You can take these dinners back to the big shots.
Just as Pearl spoke, Oscar joined them.
It's coming now, Oscar.
I was wondering.
Oscar picked up a couple of plates to help Mary. Mary picked up the other two plates.
What about my breakfast order?
In a minute. Mary's got a new customer she's shining up to, Oscar.
Oh, who?
Some stranger.
He's Vance McRae's brother.
Where?
In the first booth.
Oscar put the plates down and went to the pass-through window behind the counter. He stared at the man who was calmly drinking coffee for a long moment. He remembered the wild, skinny boy, and he found it a little unnerving to see the filled-out, solid version that was the man.
Jesus, it's him, all right.
Mary and Pearl crowded in beside Oscar to stare at the man as well.
Oscar, what is it?
That man is Colt McCrae. He's been in prison for the last 9 years. Don't go getting friendly with the likes of him, Mary.
He seemed nice enough.
Them dinners getting cold.
You mind yourself, Mary. Feed him and get him out of here.
Oscar had no urge to confront the man he saw in the booth. He might still be harboring bad feelings about the last time he was in the diner. He hurried toward the back room along with Mary, just as Turk Coolidge, who owned the Plainsman Saloon, came in. Turk Coolidge had joined the mayor's table.
Well, boys, Barney was right. Colt McCrae is sitting in my front booth right now, pretty as you please.
He's got some brass coming back here. Maybe you ought to go in there and arrest him, J.D.
For what?
I don't know. I don't care. Make something up. Let him know he ain't welcome around here.
I told you I aimed to talk to him. I can tell him it's best to move on, but unless he breaks the law, I can't do much more than that.
Maybe it's time to call up the old Vigilance Committee again if you can't keep criminals out of town.
There ain't no cause for talk like that, Roy. I do a damn good job of keeping the peace around here. I'll have my eye on this jailbird, and the first time he steps out of line, I'll nail his hide to the wall.
It's your establishment, Oscar. Why don't you throw him out?
Like J.D. said, Turk, he ain't done nothing to break the law, so it wouldn't be right to throw him out without no reason. Now, if he was upsetting the customers or something, I'd throw his ass right out in the street.
Yeah, I reckon.
Usual, Mr. Coolidge?
Please.
Breakfast's up.
Thanks, Pearl. Coolidge is here. There you are.
Colt studied the plate of scrambled eggs before him, then Mary. He could not help but notice a change in the waitress's expression. Glancing beyond her toward the bar, he also noticed a woman's face in the pass-through window.
These eggs really look good. And tell the cook, what was her name, Pearl? That I really appreciate it.
I guess they didn't care how they cooked them in prison, did they? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
Why not? It's a fact. They looked like leather and tasted worse.
Mary started to turn away, then hesitated.
What are you gonna do now that you're back?
Rob banks, hold up trains, murder innocent people, I reckon. You know, the thing that ex-convicts do.
She gave him a look a mother might cast upon a petulant child.
Well, the way they're talking about you in the back room, I think that's what they expect. You need anything else?
One more cup of coffee.
Colt glanced up at the big man walking into the diner wearing a derby hat.
And maybe one for my uncle.
Mary stepped back as Colt untangled his long legs from the booth and stood to greet his uncle. Bert McCrae was struck speechless by the transformation of boy to man. He just stood there for a long moment, shaking his head in disbelief before he walked over to the table.
Damn, boy. I wouldn't have known you if you didn't look so much like your daddy in the face.
How you doing, Uncle Bert?
Colt took his uncle's outstretched hand. His father's brother had aged a great deal since he last saw him. The dark hair had turned almost completely gray, and the cheerful face he remembered as a boy was now lined with wrinkles. But he still wore the determined expression of a bulldog. The derby was weathered and faded from the Wyoming sun, but still cocked at a jaunty angle. The exterior was frayed and worn, but Colt suspected there was no change inside.
I'm glad to see you got my letter.
Oh, yeah, got it last week. Sorry the only letter I wrote you was the one telling you about your pa.
Hell, I was surprised to get that one. I didn't think you could write.
Bert continued to look his nephew over from head to toe, astounded by the change.
You want some coffee, Mr. McCrae?
Sure, thanks.
As Mary went out to get his coffee, Bert slid into the booth opposite Colt.
Damned if it don't look like prison life was good for you. I swear it's good to see you. I'm just sorry you couldn't have got out before your daddy was murdered. Those bastards.
What bastards?
Drummond's men. Who did the shooting is hard to say, but there ain't no doubt in my mind that it was at Drummond's order. course, J.D. Townsend ain't been able to find who the shooter was, since he don't as much as take a shit without asking Drummond where to put it. You know how your daddy was. He wasn't about to roll over for Drummond like some of the other small ranchers did. And I ain't either. I reckon I'll be the next one on Drummond's list of killings, because I'm just as stubborn as your pa was. He's gonna have to kill me to get my land. It's Vance I'm worried about.
Mary set a cup of coffee in front of Bert, who smiled at her and nodded.
I've been losing a few head of cattle here and there, but Vance has lost more than I have. Not only cattle, he's lost three of his regular cowhands. They just up and quit for no reason. But I got a pretty good idea some of Drummond's scum has been putting the fear of God in them. I'm afraid Vance is gonna knuckle under and sell out to Drummond, and if he does, that's gonna cut me off from water.
Did Paul leave the ranch to Vance?
He left it to both of you, and that's one of the reasons I sent for you. Your daddy wrote his will, leaving the ranch to you and Vance, and the house to Vance and Susan, about a year ago. I wrote one, too, when the cattle rustling started. We put both wills in the bank for safekeeping.
Colt didn't reply right away while he thought that over. He'd never considered being a landowner. He had no desire to be a rancher. The one driving thought that had dominated his mind since being incarcerated was to be free. Free of all things restricting. Free to wander wherever he chose.
What does Vance think about that? He probably expected to get everything, and maybe he should have. He's got a wife and child, and I don't give a damn about working a ranch.
A look of disappointment immediately flashed across Bert's face.
Well, that ranch is rightfully half yours, and if somebody don't stop Drummond, you and your brother are gonna lose it.
Don't misunderstand me. I aim to put a stop to the cattle rustling, and I aim to find the man that shot my pa. All I want from you and Vance is a horse and saddle, a good rifle, and supplies and ammunition, and I'll help you keep the land.
I knew I could count on you. Well, here comes the sheriff to welcome you back.
Bert, I heard you was getting out, McCray. I was surprised you'd show up in Whiskey Hill again. You just passing through?
Colt didn't answer at once, taking his time to study the heavyset lawman. He remembered J.D., but only as the young bully he had been as a deputy.
So you stuck around long enough to be sheriff. I expected you'd be gone by now.
Yeah, I am the sheriff here, and it's my job to keep the peace. This town has got rid of most of your kind, and I want to make sure you understand that. I don't stand for any jailbirds making trouble in Whiskey Hill.
There ain't no call for that kind of talk, J.D. Colt served his time.
Yeah, well, there ain't no welcome for him here. Best thing for him is to get on out of town while he's got a chance.
What have you done about finding the man that shot my father, J.D.?
That's over and done. His killer's long gone. Figure it was a drifter. No way I could have caught him.
What are you doing about cattle rustling off of Bar M and Broken M spreads?
I ain't but one man with one deputy. I'm more worried about the likes of you coming back to cause trouble in town.
How many cattle has Frank Drummond lost?
I don't think I like your attitude.
Is that the next charge you and the fine citizens of Whiskey Hill are figuring to send me to prison for?
The sheriff pointed his finger directly at Colt.
You've been warned. You'd better watch your ass around here, jailbird, or I'll be on you like a chicken on a June bug.
He promptly spun on his heel and returned to the back room.
Well, I reckon you've been officially welcomed home. You best watch yourself around J.D. Everybody knows Frank Drummond owns him. Yeah, I expect we best get started if we're going to get back to the ranch before dark. I drove the wagon in since I figured I might as well pick up a few things at the dry goods store.
You go along. I'll catch up with you at the store. I just want to pay for my food.
You need some money?
Colt shook his head. Bert hurried out to his wagon while Colt walked over to the pass-through. The two women turned to look at him.
I need to settle up. Thanks for the eggs, Pearl. I hope it wasn't too much trouble.
If it had been any trouble, I wouldn't have done it.
Will we be seeing you again?
Most likely.
Vance McCrae stood on the lip of a deep gully, staring down in frustration at the rotting carcasses of two cows. At 10 or 12 feet below him, he couldn't see the brands clearly. This point on the East Range was close to his uncle's property, so the carcasses could either be Broken M or Bar M. They looked to be 3 or 4 year olds and should have been part of the herd driven over to the railroad holding pens a few weeks past. There was no need to climb down to the bottom of the gully to verify the cause of death to be from bullet wounds, though. This was not an unusual discovery during the past year. It had gotten to the point where circling buzzards were daily occurrence on his grazing land. There was also little doubt about who was responsible, but he felt helpless to do anything about it. He had no way of proving Frank Drummond responsible, and he could not ignore the fact that his father had been shot in the back after making accusations against the town's wealthiest landowner. Standing by his mount, his hand on the butt of his rifle, Vance peered over the saddle at a rider approaching from his uncle's spread. Thinking it to be one of his uncle's hands, he relaxed his grip on the rifle and waited. As the rider drew near, however, something very familiar about the way he sat the saddle struck Vance. It had been quite a while since he had seen anyone move with a horse quite like that, as if a part of the horse instead of merely aboard it.
Well, I'll be damned.
Vance made note of the obvious physical changes in his brother.
I heard you were back.
Hello, Vance. How have you been?
All right, I guess. You changed a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I reckon. You look like you picked up a few gray hairs. Married life, I reckon.
Maybe so.
How long has it been now? 7 years?
Six.
Six? And you got a young'un. A boy, I heard.
That's right. Sammy's 5 this month.
Damn, you didn't waste much time, did you?
Vance said nothing.
Susan Sessions, I heard. I always figured you two would tie the knot.
Yeah.
Vance nodded toward the big buckskin colt had selected.
I see you picked out a good horse. Uncle Bert always liked Buck. Looks a lot like that horse you used to ride before. Reckon that's why Uncle Bert named this one Buck, too. You got Pa's Winchester?
Yeah. Uncle Bert said it was all right with you. Is it?
Sure. I've got my own rifle. I don't need two.
After Vance showed him the carcasses at the bottom of the gully, Colt told him of the arrangement he had made with their uncle.
I guess that's going to be my job, to try to cut out some of this business. I'm going to be ranging over both spreads, yours and Uncle Bert's, so you need to tell your men they might be seeing me when they're riding winter range. How many have you got?
There aren't but two that stay in this winter. You know them, Bill Wilkes and Tom Mosley. They work for Pa. You staying with Uncle Bert?
Well, yes and no. I don't plan to stay at the house. I'll be camping most of the time so I can cover more ground. I'll just be checking in with Uncle Bert every now and then.
Weather's kind of cold to be living outdoors all the time. Of course, I remember you never minded the cold much. Looks like you haven't changed in that way.
I suppose. Anyway, when you've been locked up as long as I have, the open spaces feel kind of good.
I reckon you're right. You know, Pa left the ranch to both of us. You've got as much right as I have to live here.
Yeah, Uncle Bert told me, but I'm not figuring on working this ranch. It's yours, as far as I'm concerned. You're the one who's been taking care of it. I got a few things to take care of. Then I'll most likely be moving on.
You're welcome to come by the house and meet my family.
Even as he said it, Vance knew Susan would raise hell with him for extending the invitation.
Thanks. Maybe I will sometime.
Colt rode for a while, eventually reining the buckskin to a halt on a ridge overlooking the wide, shallow valley that served as the Rocking D headquarters. The last time he had ridden through this part of the hills, the valley was an endless sea of grass. Now he gazed at the huge white house with its expansive porches and the barns and outbuildings beyond it. It was an empire, all right, with 3 separate corrals.
You'd think this would be enough for one man. No explaining some folks, I reckon.
He nudged Buck with his heels and proceeded down the gentle slope. Although he saw only one or two hands over near the barn, he drew his Winchester from the saddle sling. Holding it with one hand, the butt resting on his thigh with the barrel straight up, he approached the house. No one seemed to notice him, except one man repairing a fence around the garden, who paused to stare at the stranger for a moment before resuming his work. Colt walked his horse up to the front porch.
Drummond! Frank Drummond!
There was no answer. He considered the fact that no one was home, but decided that they simply couldn't hear him within the massive house. So he raised his rifle and fired it into the air. Frank Drummond, along with two of his men, both armed, came storming out onto the porch.
Who the hell are you?
Colt McCray.
Oh, the jailbird. I heard you were out of prison. Let me tell you something, jailbird. It ain't healthy to come into my home shooting off a rifle. Something like that could get a man killed. If I want you to set foot on my land, by God, I'll send for you. Now turn that horse around and get the hell off my range.
Colt shifted his gaze momentarily to the man standing to the right of Drummond.
Are you nervous?
The man didn't reply, but he moved his hand away from the pistol he wore. Colt looked back at Drummond.
I came to tell you something. Bar M and Broken M cattle aren't going to be used for target practice. I find any more with bullet holes in them, I will automatically figure they were shot by your man, and I'll deal with that. Any missing Bar M or Broken M cattle found on Rockin' D land will be assumed stolen.
Why, you insolent son of a bitch! You come riding into my home talking to me like that, you don't know who you're messing with! I own this country! I'll have you sent back to prison! That is, if you get off my land without getting shot for trespassing.
Colt lowered the rifle barrel slightly in Drummond's direction.
That could happen, I guess. But you can be sure of one thing. It better be a damn good shot, because the next one is gonna get you. Now you've been warned.
Colt backed up until clear of the garden fence before turning his horse. Drummond's two men watched nervously, undecided on what to do.
Let him go. He had his little show, and all it did was dig his grave. Get Branch for me.
Soon, Lon Branch rode up to the wide porch that wrapped around three sides of Frank Drummond's white frame house. Drummond appeared in the doorway and stepped out on the porch.
I got a little business I want you to take care of, Lon.
Yes, sir.
I had a little visit today from another one of those McCrays, the ex-convict. And I don't like brass-balled jailbirds riding up to my house and threatening me. A man like that could very well have an accident. Maybe his horse might throw him, or he might wind up getting shot, like his old man.
Lon didn't reply at once, slow to get the meaning of his boss's pointed remarks. But after a moment, it hit him.
Oh, yes, sir. Ain't no doubt about it. A man like that is damn sure riding for a fall. Me and Brownie was thinking that same thing yesterday. We took a little ride over toward McCray's range. Thought we'd thin out his herd a little more.
Lon gave his boss a wink. Drummond failed to respond.
Anyway, we found a bunch of strays near the creek, but before we crossed over, we spotted Colt McCray sitting on his horse on the ridge above the creek. He saw us too, so we didn't do nothing. A couple of the boys heard some shooting over that way yesterday morning. When they rode over to take a look, they saw him taking target practice with the rifle.
All right then. Just be sure you take care of business so that it's neat and tidy.
Yes, sir.
Tom Mosley looked up, then tugged Bill Wilkes's shirt sleeve.
Looky coming yonder.
Well, I'll be. It's the old Wildcat himself. I wondered when he was going to come around.
The two old cowhands waited beside the barn for the rider on the buckskin horse, both men sporting grins on their faces. Colt couldn't help but grin himself.
I thought you two old coots would have dried up and blown away by now.
Well, damn, Tom! I thought this young whippersnapper might have learned some manners in prison. We might ought to turn him over a knee and dust his britches.
Yeah, maybe you ought to do it, Bill. I ain't sure I could get the job done.
These two, Tom and Bill, had worked for Colt's father since before his mother passed away. They had remained close to the boy, even when he had shown his wild streak and got on the bad side of his father.
I figured I'd better come by in case Vance hadn't told you I'm going to be riding Bar M Range. I don't want you taking a shot at me if you see me poking around after dark.
Yeah, Vance told us he saw you yesterday. Said you was planning to do some scouting.
I reckon it's a good thing you came by, because I ain't sure I would have recognized you at a distance.
Vance told me you and him were running the ranch by yourselves. I guess it's been pretty tough over the past year.
It has. Drummond's boys have scared everybody off but me and Bill. I reckon if we had any sense, we'd have left too, but hell, we're too damn old to go anywhere else.
Maybe I can help. At least, that's my intention.
Well, we can sure as hell use the help. We're losing cattle every day to lead poisoning, if you know what I mean. Vance is doing the best he can. It's just that he ain't Sam McCray.
Are you planning to stop by the house and see your brother?
I reckon not. I talked to Vance yesterday. I've got to get going anyway. I figured to camp over on the North Ridge tonight. Uncle Bert said he found a couple more dead cows over that way, and I want to stop by the house to pick up a few things.
Hey, you be careful, boy. That's close to the Rockin' D.
Oh, I aim to.
Meanwhile, inside the ranch house kitchen, Vance McCray pulled the curtain aside and peered out the kitchen window.
It's cold out there talking to Tom and Bill. I ought to go out there. I ought to invite him to eat supper with us.
Susan looked up from the pot she was stirring on the stove.
You should not. I don't plan on feeding that ex-convict. I don't want him around here, and I don't want him around Sammy. I don't know why they let him out of prison.
He served his time. I talked to him yesterday, and I really believe he's changed.
Well, I doubt that. You can put a wolf in a pen for as long as you want, but when you let him out, he's still a wolf.
Well, I'm at least going to go out and talk to him. He's willing to help, and we damn sure need him.
I'm warning you, Vance, I'm not cooking for the likes of Colt McCray.
It was a mystery to Vance why his wife seemed to have developed such a strong dislike for his brother. As far as he knew, Susan had never really had much exposure to Colt before he went to prison. And although there was never a close bond between the two brothers, Vance had never overtly criticized Colt. Hell, to the contrary, he had seldom even spoken of him during the 9 years he was away. He decided it was just simply a mother's natural tendency to protect her son from what she considered a dangerous individual. He shrugged his shoulders.
I guess if he needs to see me, he'll come to the house.
Vance watched Colt mount his horse then and turned Buck's head back toward the Broken M. As Colt rode, letting his horse set its own pace, he thought about the two old ranch hands he had just left. Tom Mosley's suggestion that he go to the house to see Vance brought back thoughts of a time when he and his brother were not so different. His mind drifted back to a summer day 9 years before, a day that would influence the rest of his life. Barely a week past his 18th birthday, he had gotten into an argument with his father because he had slipped off the day before to go hunting for antelope, leaving his chores unfinished. The argument was pretty heated, and being a hard-headed young rebel, he took off again in protest instead of mucking out the barn as he was supposed to do. Since it was warm, he decided nothing could be better than a dip in the creek that ran along the North Ridge, and at that time divided his father's range from that of Walter Sessions. The water was deep and cool, and he wasted no time in shucking his clothes and plunging in, thoughts of stables and chores far from his mind. He had not been in for a quarter of an hour when he turned to find Susan Sessions leaning against a cottonwood tree and watching him, a mischievous smile displayed across her face. She was holding his clothes in her hand.
What are you gonna do with my clothes?
She made a motion as if to throw them in the creek.
I've not decided yet. Maybe I'll just hold them and let you come get them.
I've got a better idea. Just drop them by the tree there where you found them. Drop yours on top of them and come on in. We'll both go swimming.
Wow. Colt McCrae, you've got some sassy nerve to think I'd be found in the same creek with the likes of you. I've got a good mind to tell your father about your sassy mouth.
Ha ha! If you had a good mind, you'd shuck those clothes and jump in. It's nice and cool.
If I did, you'd probably tell everybody in Whiskey Hill.
Wouldn't say a word. Wouldn't be nobody's business but yours and mine.
Susan's eyes locked with his.
It is awfully warm.
The cruel irony of that day so long ago had returned to Colt's thoughts many times while he had languished in his prison cell in Kansas. They'd made love on the grassy bank of the creek. Susan soon abandoned her veil of innocence and aggressively offered her body. When it was over, she climbed back in her clothes and assured him that if he breathed a word of what had just happened, she would denounce him as a liar. The cruelest stroke of irony, however, was the fact that while this illicit encounter was taking place, 12 miles away in Whiskey Hill, a bank robbery was in progress, resulting in the death of a bank guard.
Yep.
Bert McCrae watched from his porch as Colt looped his reins around the post.
I was wondering if you were going to show up for supper.
Tell you the truth, I hadn't thought about it. I was just going to pick up a few things I needed. But if you're offering, I might take you up on it.
What? You ain't planning on staying at the house?
No. I don't figure on being much help to you and Vance if I'm staying around here at night. If I'm going to help you at all, I can be out scouting the ridges where I can maybe see what's going on. All I need from you is some grub from time to time and cartridges for my rifle. Fair enough?
Why, yeah, it's fair enough. Now come on in the house. Rena's got supper on the table.
Rena, Bert's Indian cook, had loaded the table with food. Colt filled his plate.
Looks like damn good eating, don't it?
Colt looked at the silent Cheyenne woman and nodded in agreement. Pleased, she smiled in response. Rena had been his uncle's cook for as long as Colt could remember. His Aunt Vera had been dead since Colt was no more than a baby, and as far as he ever knew, there had never been any other woman in the house. Thoughts of a wild young Colt McCrae returned to Bert's mind as he watched the imposing figure of a man seated at his supper table. He was not surprised that Colt chose to sleep under the stars, rejecting a bed in the front room. The boy had always been more at home in the hills and the open prairie. Rena had always used to say that Colt may have been born to a white woman, but his heart was Cheyenne. It struck Bert then how cruel a penalty it was to lock this free soul away in a prison cell. Colt noticed that Bert hadn't touched his food.
What is it, Uncle Bert?
I don't know if you still care or not, but I was over to Cheyenne last week. Saw an old friend of yours, Ronnie Skinner.
Yeah,
saw him coming out of Bailey's Saloon on the edge of town. I'd have recognized him anywhere. Still the sneaky little rat he was 10 years ago, only a little older.
Did you talk to him?
Nah, he didn't even look like he knew me. I didn't say nothing to him anyway.
Colt nodded thoughtfully.
Oh, wow. The bartender said Ronnie's hanging around the saloon most of the time when he ain't in jail. Seems like he stayed in some kind of trouble around Cheyenne for the last several years. I don't think he's been back to Whiskey Hill since you and them other fellers were sent off to prison.
Bert continued to study Colt's face closely, but his nephew gave no indication of his reaction to news of his boyhood friend. Colt followed the North Ridge for a mile and a half on the lookout for strays before reaching the little stream that marked the corner of his uncle's ranch. He'd always called it Crooked Branch when he was a boy because of the many turns it made at the bottom of the ridge, and it eventually did flow into Crooked Creek. He didn't know the real name, if there was one. Maybe the Cheyenne Indians had a name for it. Beyond the stream was most likely Drummond land now, since there was very little range on this side of the railroad that didn't belong to Drummond.
Well, Buck, guess Crooked Branch is as good place as any to camp for the night.
Soon he had a fire going and coffee working up a boil. His uncle had supplied him with everything he would require, including 44 cartridges for the Winchester his father had left him. Thinking of the rifle, he propped the coffee pot on two smoldering sticks in the edge of the fire and drew the weapon from the saddle sling to inspect it. It was a fine rifle, a Winchester 73, and his uncle had told him how much his father admired it.
I can see why.
Colt turned the rifle over in his hands as if examining it for the first time. He ran his fingers over the wooden stock, remembering how smoothly the lever action had operated when he had taken target practice. He was satisfied that he and the Winchester would work just fine together. Alone, as the clear night sky appeared, he felt at peace with himself, forgetting for the moment the bitterness that was never far behind the surface of his mind. But those moments were few and short-lived for Colt McCrae, and soon replaced by memories of the years of silent, angry brooding, of the soul-killing confinement of prison life. It had been hard, but he had learned to deal with the harsh and unfair realities of his life. Looking back, he felt that he owed a lot to Bob Witcher's interest in him. Black thoughts of revenge had finally faded with time, replaced by dreams of leaving Kansas and Wyoming behind him. It would have been easy to climb in the saddle in the morning and ride away from a town that didn't want him, but things had changed with the murder of his father.
There's some things that need fixing, so I reckon I'll hang around until I get them fixed.
Lon Branch smirked at Brownie Brooks, gesturing down to where Colt McCrae lay.
I told you we'd find him near the corner of Rockin' D-Land. Look at him, all cozied up to the fire. It's a damn shame to ruin his sleeping, ain't it?
I reckon so. He'll be wishing he was back in prison pretty soon. We could just shoot the bastard from here. How far did Drummond say we were supposed to go with this Jasper?
He didn't say. He just said to take care of him. Hell, shooting him wouldn't be that much fun. What do you say we tie his ass up, hook a rope behind his saddle, and let that big horse drag him all the way back to the Broken Inn?
Well, that suits me. But it might not hurt to shoot him first to take some of the fight out of him. And when he looked like taking target practice, he might just be a handful. Come on.
Eager for the fun to begin, they left their horses and made their way as quietly as possible toward the camp. Lon took the lead, his pistol drawn.
You be quick with that rope when I jump him.
I'm right behind you.
Moving with great caution, the two assailants inched closer to the sleeping figure by the fire. Lon stopped and held up his hand, watching closely for signs of movement. But there were no indications that the horse had awakened the sleeping figure. After a moment, he waved Brownie on. Reaching a point about 15 feet away, Lon nodded to Brownie, who nodded back.
Get up from there, sleepyhead!
Without giving time for the prone figure to respond, both assailants dived upon the body, only to find that they had attacked a blanket wrapped around a saddle.
What the hell?
Whirling around at once, Lon tried to get a shot off. Too late. He wasn't fast enough to counter the 44 slug that shattered his sternum. He dropped the pistol and sagged over on his elbows and knees. Brownie dropped the rope and fumbled with his revolver in an attempt to draw it from his belt. The front sight of the pistol had snarled in his shirt, holding it fast. Colt waited, his rifle now aimed squarely at Brownie's chest, watching with bemused patience, noticing that Lon was now up on his hands and knees and struggling to get to the pistol he had dropped in the sand. Colt quickly shifted his aim. Lon collapsed heavily, and Colt shifted his attention back to Browning, who saw the futility of his efforts and promptly decided to run for his life. Colt unhurriedly raised his rifle. Brownie tumbled in the sand on the stream bank, holding his leg. Colt casually walked over to the fallen man and stood over him.
Shut up, you're crying. I ain't gonna finish you off just yet. Get on your feet.
I can't! You done put a hole in my leg!
If you don't get up from there, I'm gonna put a hole in your other leg.
All right, I'm getting up!
Brownie dragged himself over to a willow tree and pulled himself up on his feet. Colt reached down and picked up the rope Brownie had dropped and followed the wounded man to the tree.
Put your hands behind your back.
In response, Brownie made one more desperate attempt to jerk the pistol from his belt. Colt casually cracked him on the side of his head with the barrel of the Winchester. Brownie meekly obeyed Colt's orders. Once Brownie's hands were securely tied around the tree at his back, Colt took the rest of the rope and bound him head and foot to the tree. Then he grabbed the stubborn pistol by the handle and yanked it from Brownie's belt, ripping the shirt in the process. Satisfied that Brownie would be there waiting for him when he got back, he then climbed the slope to fetch the horses they had left there. After a few minutes, he returned. He released Brownie from the tree and untied his hands. Prodding him in the back with his rifle barrel, he shoved him toward Lon's body.
Drag him over here.
Limping heavily, Brownie suddenly made a move to get to his horse. Before he could take two steps, Colt was right behind him and tripped him with a kick of his foot. Brownie fell on the ground. He tried to break his fall, but landed face first in the sand. Colt grabbed him by the back of his collar and jerked him to his feet.
You don't learn very fast, do you? Now drag him over here.
Brownie balked and stood, sullenly staring at the rifle leveled at his midsection.
The only reason you ain't dead is because I want you to tell your boss that I mean business. Now, if you don't drag him over like I told you, I'm gonna shoot you and be done with it.
Realizing only then that Colt wasn't planning to finish him off, Brownie became eager to obey. He grabbed his late partner by the ankles and dragged him over to his horse. He lifted Lon's body up to lay it across the saddle. Once the body was resting across the saddle, Colt pulled both rifles from their saddles.
Mount up and take your partner back to the Rockin' D. When you get across the creek on Rockin' D land, you might want to tie his hands and feet together to keep him from sliding off of that saddle. You tell your boss this is the price he'll pay for slaughtered McCray cattle. Next time I catch you on Bar M or Broken M, I ain't likely to be in such a generous mood.
Colt watched as the would-be assassin splashed across the stream, leading Lon Branch's horse behind him. Standing now in the cold darkness of the November night, Colt felt a chilling sensation run the length of his spine, a feeling that had nothing to do with the temperature. It had all happened so fast that there had been no time for conscious thought, but now the sober realization struck him. He had just taken a man's life. The fact that it was a life that needed taken did little to minimize the impact.
What choice did I have? They came to kill me.
He had prepared himself to kill. Leaving prison, he had promised his dead father that his death would be avenged.
I wonder if the man I shot was a man who shot my father. I wonder if I'll ever know who murdered my father. Well, there's no turning back now. There's gonna be a war.
His thoughts went to Vance and his uncle, and he wondered how he could confine the war to himself and Drummond and not endanger their families. By letting Brownie go, Drummond might see that the war was with him, not his uncle, and not Vance.
I've started it, so be it. Let the devil get ready for visitors.
It was almost daylight by the time Brownie's tired horse covered the final 50 yards from the gate to Drummond's front porch. He jumped down from the saddle, wincing as he landed on his wounded leg and staggered up the steps. He suddenly found himself facing an irate Alice Flynn, who had been stoking the kitchen stove in preparation for cooking breakfast.
What is the matter with you? Have you lost what little sense you had?
Lon! He killed Lon! And he shot me!
Mr. Drummond ain't up yet.
I'm up. What the hell is going on?
He shot Lon. Killed him. And he shot me in the leg.
Who did?
Colt McCray.
Drummond glanced down at Brownie's bloody leg, then shifted his gaze to the body lying across the saddle.
Alice, go on back to the kitchen and fix breakfast.
Yes, sir.
What in the hell happened? I sent you two over there to take care of that convict, and you come back here like a dog with your tail between your legs.
Nothing we could do, Mr. Drummond. He was waiting for us. We never had a chance. Poor old Lon. That bastard cut him down before he could get off a shot. And then he said to tell you that anybody else riding on McCray Range would get the same.
Oh, he did he? Get on back to the bunkhouse before you get blood all over my front porch. Take Lon with you. Pete'll have to have somebody dig a hole for him, I guess. Tell Pete to patch you up if he can. No, tell him to take you in to see the doctor.
It wouldn't hurt to let the sheriff know that this ex-convict was on a shooting rampage. Drummond can build on his justification for killing Colt McCray, and maybe his brother and uncle, too, if they got in the way. From the talk he had heard, the whole town of Whiskey Hill would like to be rid of Colt McCray.
Tell Pete to come see me before he goes.
Later, when Pete Tyler, the foreman of the Rockin' D, pulled the buckboard up before the house with Brownie in it, Drummond came out to meet him.
Pete, when you take Brownie into town, make sure everybody sees him. As soon as I get my breakfast, I'm going into town to see the sheriff. But here's what I want you to do first. Pick a couple of the men you trust and send them out to find that damn McCray jailbird and take care of him. Understand?
I'll take care of it.
He turned the buckboard around and headed back to the barn. Lon and Brownie had always been the boss's choice for doing any dirty little jobs that needed doing. But Pete had a crew of 8 more men, and in his opinion, any one of them would have been a better choice than those 2 saddle tramps. Outside of the barn, 2 of his men were loading wire on a wagon.
You two ain't gonna mend no fences today. I got something better for you to do.
Lou George looked up at the wagon.
What the hell happened to you, Brownie?
That's what I want you and Jack to take care of.
Pete explained the nature of Drummond's problem and passed along his order to eliminate it.
So, you and Lon tried to kill a snake and got yourself bit.
You best watch yourself. He's a mean one.
Is that so? We'll see how mean this sidewinder is. Hell, me and Jack here, why, that's what we specialize in. Pulling the fangs out of rattlesnakes like McCray. Ain't that right, Jack?
Jack Teach grinned wide and nodded.
Well, make damn sure you get the job done. Mr. Drummond already sent Brownie and Lon to take care of it. Lon came back across his saddle and Brownie here shot up. And the job ain't done yet. And Mr. Drummond, he ain't too happy about it.